So, all right, so we're in the last week of this series. And the name of the series is Creating a Next Steps Culture. We want to have a culture in which we are all working together to just encourage, sharpen, and move along with one another in taking the next step in our relationship with the divine. So we're going to do that and create space to commit as individuals, certainly as families we may do that, but also as a community that we want to continue to step into the wider culture, into the surrounding community and live embodying and modeling the ways of Jesus. That's what we want to be about. So let's begin with this thing. I would say most people, I don't want to say everyone because maybe not, but most people want to see our world change. Would you agree with that? That I think most people want to see our world change, and we can spend an immense amount of energy trying to change others. We might spend a lot of energy trying to change others' behaviors. We buy into the duality that there are good people and bad people. We, of course, are always on the good people side. Isn't that interesting? And we just need to change or get rid of the bad people side. So in this series, essentially what we have been arguing is that change begins with us, or maybe better said, within us. What if we simply take the next step in being formed and transformed by the divine? Could that be a more effective way to lasting change? I have found this true within my story. So I want to take you back to when the summer that I was going to go into fourth grade. It's just a few years ago. Go back there. That summer was the first summer that I went to my church's VBS. Anyone know this? Vacation Bible School. So I went to VBS, and it was at this VBS that I learned the dangers and evils of rock and roll music and cussing. You know, the swears with the mouth thing. So I learned the dangers of that. I specifically remember that week that I had to take a hammer and smash my Bon Jovi New Jersey cassette tape as this part of ritual. I know some other ones. In my little fourth grade, almost fourth grade, about to be fourth grade mind, there's a couple things. Like, one, I was like, I don't want to do that. I paid with that my own money. I don't want to smash that thing. And then there was that part. I paid money for this. Is this a good idea? Should we just bust things that we... good numbers thing, right? But I remember in this thing, but then what I was instructed to do is when you go back to school, you are to go to your friends and you are to tell them, make, you know, clear what we're going to do here is if you listen to that music and if you say those words, then we are not to be friends anymore because I can't be around you. So I'm inviting you to change the way you behave and the way you talk. I'm asking you to do this, and if you cannot get on board, then you will just be further lost. So, first day of school, fourth grade, and I don't know about you, but fourth grade for me was now I'm on the upper elementary side of the building. It's big time. First day of school, I got my friends rallied around, and I said, here are the terms. You all need to stop listening to this music. I remember on the playground, I can picture it like yesterday. You need to stop all the cusses, all those swears, no more of that, or else I cannot be your friends. And it was the first day of fourth grade that my friend said, see you, Wally. And I remember walking away and go, what? It didn't work. They didn't change their lives. What changed is me being in their lives. That's what changed. And I remember that next Sunday, I went back to my Eager Beavers Sunday school teacher, and I said, it backfired. It didn't work. I just ended up friendless. I have no friends because they all said, well, then see ya. And I remember she said to me, so you're experiencing what it means to be persecuted for your faith. Yeah, there it was. Now, we can jump ahead to today, and I stand here and look back and go, I was not persecuted for my faith. I wasn't. I asked them, you get on board or get lost, and they rightfully told me, you can't tell us how to live, man, you get lost. I wasn't being persecuted because they didn't even know what was going on. I didn't ask them, hey, you guys, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you about what's rooted at my foundation. It was, stop behaving in these ways, or I'm not hanging out with you anymore. These are very different things. So then, we find ourselves in this when we look out culture wars. That's kind of what we understand it, right? Culture wars is the language. Judge the wicked culture out there. If they don't turn, then I guess they'll burn. But what if we actually understand that truly to see a world changed, it will come from inhaling and absorbing the universe-rattling love of the divine first? Because it's not our job to change how others behave, but rather to awaken to the truth, and I've said it over and over, first slide, this. All people are created in the image of the divine, but we choose for ourselves to be formed in the likeness of the divine. That's our choice to make. We get to walk into that. We get to invite people to that. Yes, all people are created in the image of God, but to grow in the likeness, well, that's our choice to take that step, to say yes, to more and more learn the ways of Christ and say, I want to walk in these ways. Yep, we get to step into that. But I can't tell someone, you just do this. So throughout this series, what we've looked at is a couple of ancient Hebrew prophets. We began with a guy named Elijah, and then we moved to his predecessor, and a guy named, we read it and we say Elisha, but we go with the Hebrew pronunciation, Elisha, so that we can, and it helps us really keep those, because if you say Elijah, Elisha, which one? Eli. Well, let's see. Oh, no, that didn't. And then there's another guy. So Elijah and Elisha. Okay, so Elisha, we looked at him, and these two guys, essentially, in many ways, what we would say is a first kind of discipleship relationship. Elisha coming from Elijah, like learning from him, calling him his spiritual father, and gaining and going out from this relationship. It was beautiful. And Elisha made this statement, like, hey, towards the end of Elijah's life, he said, I don't want to be like you, Elijah. I want double your spirit. I want more. I believe that there is more. That God is up to way more, and I want to step into that more. So I actually want double whatever it is that you've had. And then, when we read in the story, Elisha experiences, witnesses to double the miracles or signs that Elijah participated in, which is beautiful. Well done. Wonderful. So to end our series, we're going to look at the end of Elisha's life. So if you'll join me, we're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 13. We'll begin in verse 14. Verse 13, now Elisha was suffering from the illness from which he would die. Jehoash, king of Israel, went down to see him and wept over him. My father, he cried, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. Now, if you were not here with us from within the earlier in the series, this statement that this king just made on the deathbed of Elisha is what Elisha said to Elijah before he was swept up in a chariot of fire, as you do. He yelled the same thing. So then what that tells us is something is going on. A statement has been repeated in the scripture, which means the text is begging for us to make some connections. Context, context, context. Like, what is this leading us to? How should we look into this? We begin with asking the question, who is this Jehoash? Jehoash. Oh, this is fun. So now we just back up a couple verses, and we'll read about who this guy is. So, chapter 10, verse 11. In the 37th year of Joash, king of Judah, Jehoash, son of Jehoahaz, became king of Israel and Samaria, and he reigned 16 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord. It did not turn from any of the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which he had caused Israel to commit. He, this Jehoash, continued in those sins. Now, we have to make the first thing, the first point out of this is, do you not think the writers of the scriptures just are laughing at the readers when they do this? Ha ha. You know what we ought to do is name everybody the same dadgone name. We'll just tweak a letter or two, but it'll all sound the same. And then what we'll do is we'll make them all kings of Israel too. Oh, wait. Not kings of all of Israel, regions of Israel. So you're all just swimming in what? Who? And he's king. Oh, but not of there. It's ha-ha, very funny, funny people, thank you for that. Now, it is funny, but the key thing here, if you're like trying to keep all this straight, Jehoash did evil in the eyes of the Lord and followed in the footsteps of who? Jeroboam. So let's look at some 150-ish years earlier, Jeroboam did something pretty nasty. Well, he led Israel, all of Israel at the time, into a civil war, leaving the nation divided into a north and south, a very us versus them within a nation conflict and fighting, which I think it's just so sad the problems people had back then. Now, Jeroboam, what he did is he took 10 of the 12 tribes, there are 12 tribes of Israel. Jeroboam took 10 of them and made those 10 tribes a nation within the nation, and they would call that nation Israel, within Israel. The other two tribes would then be known as Judah. So this is important. It really helps when you're reading the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures here within this. So the other two tribes become Judah. That's all clear as mud. And so then, to hustle along, let's go to a map. So we go to the map and we get pictures. They took really good pictures. They had Polaroid cameras back then. But you hear Jeroboam. Jeroboam leads this top part that becomes Israel, the 10 tribes. Rehoboam, come on with the names. Rehoboam is Solomon's son. Solomon's son, he becomes king of Judah. So he's Judah, and he leads that area. And so to do that, now let's go to the second map. So we would do this. So we just thought we would, I would point this out. You have, because what Jeroboam does, which is really, really interesting and crazy, is when you have these two different areas, if you are a nation that has festivals, but specifically there are some festivals that are called pilgrimage festivals. So this would be Sukkot, this would be Pentecost, and this would be Passover. These festivals, what they would do is it's a pilgrimage festival, so you would go to Jerusalem, the central city, you would go to Jerusalem and you would worship at the temple. But now if you're Jeroboam, that's a problem. Because you don't want the people all going to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, because maybe they like it. And they're like, man, our temple is here. Because the temple represents the meeting, the merging of heaven and earth. They believed that the temple is where the divine resided. So we want to be there. So if they go to the temple, they might want to stay. They might want to give their allegiance to Rehoboam, because you know what? They get the temple. So Jeroboam says, well, we've got to fix that. So what I'll do is I'll make an altar in Dan at the north of Israel, and I'll make an altar in Bethel there. So now, instead, you don't have to go to Jerusalem. Listen, everyone, you can just go like to Grand Rapids and Lansing, and you don't have to deal with the Chicago traffic. That kind of thing. Like, if we just put it here, then you go there, and what you will worship at these altars is an idol in the image of a golden calf, is what Jeroboam makes. Whoops. That violates the beginning of what we know as the Ten Commandments. No other gods before, and do not bow down to idols. Jeroboam, bad king. And what we learn in this story is that Jehoash did not turn from the sins of Jeroboam. He continued in them, which he means he continued to lead Israel to worship at the altar of idols, dividing their allegiance between gods. Bad king. All of this is a blinking warning sign for us to learn from today. When we read in the, and you can read in the scriptures, when you read about kings and all these people that followed in the footsteps of so-and-so, whether for good or bad, it's basically an invitation for us to do an inventory of what is it that we have inherited from those that have come before us. See that invitation? They keep it on and they're like, don't carry that on. We get to go, what have I inherited from grandma and grandpa, from mom and dad? What is it that I bring forward? What is it that I'm learning from the systems and structures that I am a part of? What will I bring forward because this is good? And what will I say? That is a problem, and I'm going to end that. I'm going to squash, I'm breaking the chains of that because that is a problem, and I don't want to bring it forward. Do you see that invitation? We can read the list of names and go, who are these? Come on. Or you could go, oh, it's interesting. Why are they carrying that on? Why didn't they carry that on? What a gift that we have. Now, in the first week of our series, when the divine pulled Elijah, remember Elijah did this big thing with the Canaanite gods, and he had this whole big thing, and like God showed his power, Elijah's God showed his power, he was excited, and then all of a sudden he ran from Jezebel, and he hid, and he all of a sudden did a pity party. I'm the only faithful one left, I'm the only one with faith, and they're trying to kill me, and the divine pulled him out of his pity party and said, hey, listen, you're not the only one left. In fact, I need you to go and anoint three people. In that story, the three people he anointed, one was Jehu, king of Israel. The second one was our boy, Elisha, and said he will succeed you as prophet. The third one was Hazael, king of Aram, who would war with and oppress Israel because of their waywardness. So we just take all that floating in our heads and let's return to our story of Elisha and King Jehoash. Now, verse 15, Elisha said, get a bow. He's talking to the king. Get a bow and some arrows, and he did so. Take the bow in your hands, he said to the king of Israel. When he had taken it, Elisha put his hands on the king's hands. Open the east window, he said, and he opened it. Shoot, Elisha said, and he shot. The Lord's arrow of rescue, an arrow of rescue against what? Aram. Oh, interesting. Elisha declared, you will completely destroy the Arameans at Aphek. So this is about finally overcoming Aram and getting back on track, maybe? So now we ask the question, what's the deal with like kind of a cards type of game except for bow and arrows about how the war is going to go? Did you see that ritual thing? Yeah. Guess what? Little Bible nerd time. Are we excited? I am. I think this is so fun. Little nerd time. Scholars point out that during this time, there are a number of divination practices. That's what they would call it. Rituals that were symbolic of what they understood the divine to be up to. One such practice was called bellomancy. Bellomancy involved arrows, some being shot, others being struck on the ground. Most common would be to mark three arrows. Two of them, one would say, this arrow means if it goes the farthest, then God orders this of me. If the other one goes the farthest, this one's marked that says God forbids me to do this. And then a third arrow would be blank, which is like choose your own adventure. Discern for yourself what you will do here. In this story, it's one arrow. Elisha says, shoot it, and he names that arrow. What's he name it? Victory. He names it, you will win. That's what this is. Rescue is what he calls it. This arrow is the arrow of rescue from Aram. So, back to our arrow games. Then he said, take the arrows, and the king took them. Elisha told him, strike the ground. He struck it three times and stopped. The man of God was angry with him and said, you should have struck the ground five or six times. Then you would have defeated Aram and completely destroyed it. But now you will only defeat it, you would defeat it only three times. Now it'll go on from here, verses 22 to 25, we'll unpack how Aram will continue to oppress Israel until the day comes when Jehoash will recapture the lost cities by defeating Aram, guess how many times? Three. But it says, will not banish them completely from their presence. Ding, 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 just as Elisha said. The symbolism and ritual is being sketched out in this story. What it's telling us is it's offering us, the king shows us, it's offering us two different ways to approach life. To get at that, and that's what we want to lean into, we have to ask some questions. Why is the man of God angry? Why did he get angry at him for stopping at three? Great. Well, to get at that, we need to back up and look at another question. When Elijah was taken away in the chariots of fire, what was it that Elisha asked of him before he left? What did he ask? Double. I want double what you have. I want more of the divine. I believe in a big God that's doing more. And then as soon as Elijah gets taken up, Elisha then goes and hits the water, spreads, and he steps into the moment. And what Elisha does with the rest of his life is he goes all in. He gives 100% of his life, his words, his ways to the way of the divine. He's all in. Why is he upset here? He says, at that time, my father, he cried, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. And then he goes all in. But the king doesn't go all in. He hits three arrows and he stops. And Elisha is ticked off because what he did is he leaves arrows in his quiver. He's angry because the king is working with a scarcity mindset. You're holding back. You're keeping a couple arrows in the quiver just in case. That's what you're doing. Which is true of many people who live from a place of scarcity, unwilling to go all in with their lives. Some, of course, give their lives to the wrong things. Others still spend time and energy parsing out their resources into pennies. Then they hand one to 1,000 different things and don't actually make a difference in anything. This story is an invitation to how will we approach life. There's a legendary story of an NFL professional football coach that went to one of his players, we'll call him Mike, and he said, hey, Mike, I need you to help me recruit other players to our team. So he goes to him and he says, will you do this? Mike says, yeah. He goes, what kind of player are we looking for, coach? The coach says to him, when someone comes and knocks a player down and he doesn't get up, we don't want that player who gets knocked down and doesn't get up. We don't want that. Okay. And he said, now there's a player who gets knocked down and he gets up. He gets knocked down again, but he stays down. And Mike catches, he goes, we don't want that player either, do we, coach? He goes, no, we don't. Now, there's another where a player gets knocked down, he gets back up. He gets knocked down, he gets back up. He gets knocked down, he gets back up. He gets knocked down, and he continues to get back up. And Mike says, that's the player we want, isn't it, coach? And the coach says, nope, we don't want him either. I want you to find the person who's knocking everyone down, and I want him. And this isn't about violence or winning. This is about the one who takes initiative and says, I'm going to take the skills and talents that I have, and I'm all in. You don't have to tell me, I'm after it. I am in, and here we go. That's what he was after. I will give all into this thing. And he's like, yeah, that's the player that we want. all in, to live a life without regrets, which we can also learn from the wise sage Michael Scott, who is quoted as quoting, mountains, that's, did we just lose our slides when we're just getting ready to hear from the sage Michael Scott? Well, we'll see if we get it back in. If not, anyone know who Michael Scott is? Yeah, from The Office. Michael Scott is quoted as quoting Wayne Gretzky. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzky said it, but Michael Scott quoted Wayne Gretzky and took credit for it. That's why it's funny. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. That was his point. Or if we stick with the Hebrew prophet Elisha, don't leave any arrows in your quiver. Don't leave any arrows in your quiver. Why? Pastor and author Erwin McManus wrote a book titled The Last Arrow, centered on this scripture. And the subtitle of the book is Save Nothing for the Next Life. I love that title because it's confusing to me when people trust the divine for an afterlife yet live with such scarcity in this life. I don't get that. Best I can grasp of after death is it's rooted in resurrection and all things being made new, so I don't want to be found dragging a withheld life into the next life. I have this day, so this day gets all of me. I have this life gets all of me. My goal isn't to go to bed at night and go to sleep with energy. Does anybody go, man, I just wish I could get to bed at night and was chock full of energy? No. My favorite part of exercise, I have a favorite part, is when my body tells me that I gave it my all. You know when your body says, whoa, you really did that, didn't you? But I love that. I love that feeling because to me that's a divine ache. You went all in. You gave it everything you had. Well done. Now sit down. I love Irwin's subtitle, Save Nothing for the Next Life, because I think it's great advice on how to live without regrets. Of course, because going all in means great impact. I'm all in. I might fail. That's learning. I learned how not to do it. All right. All in, though. And I know the ripple effect goes, which begins with simply taking the next right step. What's that next right step? So what is that for you? Where in your life do you know like you feel like I'm withholding a little? I'm withholding. I get it. I have a bit of a scarcity mindset in this. Is it sinking into deeper community, intentionally connecting with others specifically to grow? I want to be and have relationships that sharpen me, challenge me, and that I get to do the same, that we get to dig in and call one another to more. Is it immersing yourself in some faith practices, which the whole point is to be stretched and strengthened in the very foundation of your being? I know I need to have a rhythm of some practices. Is it pouring your skills and your giddy up into serving? Or is it simply taking resources and giving to make a bigger impact? That's what it is. I'm all in, whatever it is. That's the invitation. That's the invitation. Here's what I have. I am all in. Now, I want to let you know that I'll go first. I filled out my card this weekend, just praying over it, for things, because I want for some things. to grow and stretch in my life. But I put down connect because in this last, say, month, for sure, I've made it, in looking at this and praying over this, made it intentional to be in relationships in which there is stretching going on. There is calling one another to more, to being a part of relationships that do that. So I wanted to do that. And then I put impact. Here it says, be good news to others through the use of my strengths, gifts, resources, and influence. So then I have to wrestle with what are the skills that I have? I have to wrestle with that. What are the skills that I have? Well, I can talk a lot. I like to be a Bible nerd. That's fun. Maybe those two together will be a good time as I'm also connecting in these meaningful, purposeful, moving forward relationships. But my favorite thing in this connection relationships is I just ask questions and listen. That can go a long ways. I've watched some of the people that I'm with grow because I've said nothing. I've asked questions and I've watched them make the leaps themselves. And I stand there and cheer them on and give them a hug. What is that for you? What is it that you want? What's that next step? Just next step. What I'd love to do is just create space in our time. The band will come up and we'll sing. You may or may not have lyrics, but we'll sing. You can sing, you can stand there, you can take a card. We would love in this time to, if you would, fill out a card, mark something down. And then what we're doing, again, is we have the whiteboard in the back. If you want to walk back there, pin that thing back there, great. That would be lovely. And if you need more time, we'll just tell the band, kick it one more time, as they do. We want to create space to do this because we as a community want to be growing. What is that next right step? That's all. Next right step. Gracious God, we bless you for the invitation to continue to walk with you every day. Breath. We have breath. You awaken us. And we can respond. What might our next step be in responding to life, to the breath in our lungs, to love that is unexplainable and unavoidable? You whisper, you shout, you rattle, you invite, you wrestle with us. And we are invited to take that next step in the wrestling match. I bless you, God, for the opportunity to gather as a community, to step into these moments together. What a gift. What a gift. We bless you. And as we take that next step, as you do, you whisper, you speak, you nudge, you embrace, you hold, you draw us forward. May you continue to do that, and may we be a people that respond 100%. We just be all in that next right step with you. Amen.
Invite you to take your time with those cards, and then when you're finished with them and you want to come back and stand and join in singing.
Of everything. Open.
want to continue to work on cards, you can. We do not have a copier on site, so instead what we did is we have like 20,000 cards, some crazy amount. So if you need to, like, I don't want to forget what I marked down, and you want to write that on another card and take it with you, that's fine. We've got plenty, so you can do that. But the whole idea of next steps, we want to be a community that creates space and opportunity. And this isn't just certainly about internally, but externally in how we live our lives, not just how we function in a programmatic community. No. There are so many ways to connect, to serve, to grow, so that it makes an impact in the wider community. This space, the 3 Mile Project, if you want to serve, what a opportunity to serve middle school students, 5th grade through 9th grade, serve students in that, and invite them to find their way back to God and do that just by serving, great opportunity. Hope Unexpected, great opportunity. Bethesda Farm, great opportunity. Lots of ways. I bet your neighbors. I bet when you have families that unexpectedly, wow, these boys wanted to come now, and they could use a community to rally around them. Well, endless opportunities to serve and to be in community together and to grow then. What a gift. Our hope is that we would just take that next right step together. Ah, it'd be good. Church, Walker Harbor people, may you know that you are created in the image of the divine. You then are invited to grow in the likeness of the divine. May you take the time to take that next right step. What might that be? What is that next right step? And that you would be all in. I'm after this. I want to create the future. I want to create the future. And we would step in, all in, 100%. So may you know that you are loved, you are met right where you are, and you are invited where you are to take that next step, and that we would do that in community, and we would do that to impact the wider community. And that is done with the power and partnership of the grace and peace of Christ. May you go in that, and may you live through that. Amen.